I'm the French Canadian Sensation from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the GunnaGeek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer. People that don't like me tend to call me Starpie. My friends call me SP. And your reporters for this 14th episode of Season 4 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Maybe less glitter.
And Neil.
It's enough to bring the house down. Almost.
And my quote for the evening is, "Oh, I knew we should have had Slade Wilson do the party planning." This podcast is recorded on Thursday, February 18th, 2016. Live on the Blub streaming service! I can't wait for the Venture Brothers to come back. Okay, we are just a few guys that discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I am by no means, in any shape or form, a comic expert. I'm really a sci-fi guy. Go Star Wars! But just a little reminder that I am catching up to the comic lore because I'm actually starting to read comics, and to great folks like Chris.
I heart comics.
And Neil.
Are we going to talk Rebirth? Can we? Please, can we? Rebirth?
Don't even know what that is.
Not yet, but you will.
You will, sir.
I'm excited. During this podcast, we'll be talking about what happened in episode 14 of season 4 of the CW television show Arrow, as well as news, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past and that will impact future episodes. It will contain spoilers, so at that point, consider yourself warned, but we try to be light and we don't really like really spoil stuff. We don't like show you screenshots of stuff or anything. We just talk about the news. And as a reminder, all of our past episodes that have been published can be found in the archives on our network page at GunnaGeek.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on the 18th of March, we will not only have one, not two, not three, not even four or five. We're going to have six GunnaGeekers at C2E2, 2:45 p.m. And we will be talking about everyday podcasting, won't we, Chris?
That's what I'm told. I'll believe it when I see it. We're going to go in there. We're going to talk about partying on podcasts instead.
Party! So we're going to have a bunch of producers. We're going to have co-hosts. We're even going to have a newbie on and a secret guest. That's secret for now, anyway. Secret. It's a secret. It's a surprise. So just stay tuned.
And I'll tell you this, it's not Batman.
I'm Batman.
Uh-oh. Nicely done.
That's right. Okay, but enough of that, and we'll talk more about upcoming panels for the Gunna Geek later in the show, but right now we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about the Arrow episode Code of Silence. Neil, break it down.
All right, guys. This week, season 4, episode 14 of the CW television show Arrow, titled Code of Silence. Air date, Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. The director, we've talked about this, James Bam Bam Bamford. It's awesome. We've talked a lot about James Bamford on this show. The longtime stunt and fight coordinator for this show that has really taken the fight and the stunts to the next level. This is his second episode directing Arrow, and it's awesome. Writers, they broke out the big guns. So again, another way of telling us how important this is. Wendy Miracle herself, executive producer on 23 episodes, co-executive producer on 23 episodes, producer on 23 episodes, co-producer on 20, writer on 16, and more importantly for next week, the writer of the Vixen series on CWC.
Yes.
The co-writer for this episode is Oscar Balderrama, script coordinator for 46 episodes, writer on 4, plus a great resume, Everwood, Drop Dead Diva, Mob Doctor, and others. So definitely the A-list writing talent and one of my favorite directors for this show, James Bamford.
Absolutely. This was a fun episode. Code of Silence. I thought a little bit about this because I'm thinking in terms of titles, and that's always what comes to my mind is what's the theme of this episode for the title. So Ollie's got his little thing with William, and we'll talk about that later. It comes up with Thea and stuff. And you have Quentin out of the blue, all of a sudden wanting to push Mama Smoke away. Bad Quentin, don't do that. Although I think at some point in time, Mama Smoke's gonna know what's going on around her. So, I mean, she's gonna be in on the secret, right?
I mean, everyone else knows all the secret identities anyways. What's one more?
Yeah, she's the only one who doesn't.
Yeah.
That's right. You got that, and you've got Reva, who is apparently not married. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Scandalous.
Oh, yeah. So you got all that going on. So, Chris, what do you think the theme is?
Secrets are bad, and eventually they come to bite you in the tuchus.
The tuchus.
That you can blame Brian Michael Bendis for my using the word tuchus.
Yeah, the Ollie is keeping secrets and feels bad about his secrets. The writers brought it back over and over again. They're like, guys, just to make sure you didn't miss that secrets are bad and that Ollie is keeping a bad secret, and we're going to parallel that in Lance, and we're going to parallel it kind of in the flashbacks. Not so much, because his secret is out in the flashbacks, but lying's bad, and it's going to destroy people.
The flashbacks are all about, hey, remember, Oliver Queen used to kill people and do it quite brutally. Here's the birth of that killer.
Should we talk about the flashback now and get that out of the way?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, I came up with a great idea. The reason why Conklin is dead is the dude needed to slap more water. If he would have slapped more water, he would not be dead right now.
What a callback.
Wow. Classic Starling Tribune. That was a deep cut.
That's right here.
You know what? He had to go. He was not a nice guy. He was in the way. I was actually taken a bit aback when the rest of the prisoners said, all right, you want to prove it? Kill Conklin. And I was like, huh.
Well, he's universally loathed is what it comes down to. Nobody likes him. Even the men that are supposed to work with him, I don't think really like him that much.
Yeah. So he's been in a lot of stuff, right? He's been in Sanctuary. He's like the proverbial, the actor's name is Ryan Robbins. And I like everything he's in. He's been in that summer Falling Skies. He's just a ton of stuff. And he always has like a secondary role or whatever. So I knew when they brought him in that he was going to last the season. He wasn't going to be Ollie's buddy or anything.
He's basically coming in to die.
Yeah, right. And I'm just surprised he lasted this long, but he's managed to screw up a lot of things in the process. And the dude's actually a little bit capable, and I'm just, yeah, he could have slapped some more water to survive, but he didn't, so oh well.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say this is the birth of the killer, Chris, because he's 1 year away, effectively, or a year and a third of a season, let's say, from coming back to Starling Tribune, where he was putting people down left, right, and center without a care in the world. So he's got a year.
Yeah, I had that same thought as we were watching something. He's about a year out for him to come back and be a brutal killer, unless they stretch next season's flashbacks into 2 years or something like that. And at the same time, how is he going to grow that giant beard in a year? Because he had this giant beard when they found him. I don't know how you grow that in a year.
I could grow it in 5 weeks, guys. You know, whatever.
But look at the speed that Oliver Queen's beard has grown in the last almost 4 years. It has not been that quick. And now he even got a haircut.
There's beard extensions. They probably still have the prop from season one around.
So what you're saying is Amanda Waller is going to airdrop in beard extensions for him to protect his cover.
Oh, listen, he has the proverbial 5 o'clock shadow. He's probably shaving twice a day. You never know.
He's not shaving twice a day. He's maybe shaving like once every 3 days, and he's trimming it to look like he's not shaved. That's what he's doing.
This has been the CW Arrow Hair Report.
Live with your follicle report from Lian Yu, it's the Starling Tribune.
Bringing it back, the Oliver Queen Hair Report. That's again another callback to season one. Man, bringing back a lot of stuff this episode. All right, let's move on. since we're talking about Conklin and Oliver, let's talk about the fights. We got to talk about the fights. Bam Bam is a bunch of fights and did not disappoint, in my opinion. A lot of street brawling, a lot of hand-to-hand combat, not necessarily the stuff that we saw out in the streets with the League of Assassins war that went on. This was close-in, brutal combat, and Bam Bam did it justice.
Let's talk about that Conklin fight to start off with. Well, Ollie picks the handcuffs, picks up the knife, and they go at it, knife fighting. I think this is the first full-on knife fight that we've seen in Arrow in a long time, as far as I can recall.
Well, they're just tiny swords, man. We saw sword fight.
The mechanics are totally different. Anyways, and then the ending. Tons of great dramatic action. Bam Bam's camera work on that one and the director of photography, they really focused in on the action. We didn't lose a beat in that fight. And then that dramatic ending with the knife right in the chest. I was like, dude, that's a good fight.
The fight had a very Bourne feel to me, for lack of a better term. It felt like I was watching one of like the Bourne Identity when he's having those close quarter fist fights and stuff like that.
And that's a compliment, because those fights were done really well.
It was, and, you know, bringing it back, I like to be in the BSG chapel again.
Nice.
For those of you that don't know, BSG had an opera house. BSG is Battlestar Galactica, so we're talking about the 2003-2004 reboot that Robert D. Moore did, and there's a big thing about the opera house, and this is that opera house, isn't it?
I don't know.
I actually think this is separate. So they have used the Opera House, which is, I believe it's the Orpheum Theater here in Vancouver. So this was actually a different theater. You didn't see the Gothic arches at the back of it.
That's true. You didn't.
They have used that once before in this season. I think when he was announcing, was he announcing? I think it was like episode 2 or 3 of season 4. So they have used it.
Well, so it had that feel to it. And the fights in there were amazing. You know, Oliver is like the big, good fighter. He's got the A game. He's the best that Team Arrow has. And he's having a go with this guy. I mean, this guy could probably give Damian Dark and Malcolm Merlyn a run for their money, too.
Yeah. Malcolm's evil. This guy's a different kind of evil. I don't know. Let's talk about Malcolm for a sec, because I did not expect to see him show up with Hive. I did not expect him to just be around the table. It's like, all right, the League of Assassins is no more. He didn't have to regroup. He didn't have to figure out how to consolidate a power base. Bam, he's at the table with the evil League of Evil. Hive has added to their power base, because you got to think Ra's al Ghul still has connections. He still has people that maybe don't know that the League is disbanded. And he starts by giving up a really important piece to this whole Star City puzzle.
The question I would have is he truly part of Hive, or is he just playing them for future gain? I mean, we know he's obviously part of them and enough that he gave them the keys to the kingdom with Oliver. He said, hey, his weakness is his son. He didn't say he was the Green Arrow, so he's still got that in reserve. But is he truly a part of Hive, or is he just biding his time for another opportunity to get back in power again? Are we going to see Malcolm Merlyn become the leader of Hive at the end of this season?
Oh, maybe.
It depends how many people Damian Dark kills on teleconferences, really.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, see, that's why he brought it in. He's like, okay, I'm going to get rid of some guys. You know, I'm preparing for the culling, and I'll just bring Malcolm in to be a temporary replacement until I can find somebody else better. That's all it was.
I mean, I'm kind of riffing on how he became the leader of the League of Assassins, but he kind of sits on the periphery, lets his evil plan come into work, and then picks up the pieces and takes over. And I could see something like that happening with Hive now. I think it's a lot tougher because Damien's a tougher foe, but he'll let someone else kill him and then pick up the pieces.
It's funny that you say that, Chris, because that's been his MO as well. You know, gotta take out Ra's, gonna let Ollie kill him. He lets other people do the big events, so he's gonna let Ollie kill Damien.
And he still has, what's his name in his back pocket that he resurrected from ashes?
Vandal Savage.
Yes, he still has Vandal Savage in his back pocket, so the dude's still got connections.
Literally in his back pocket. That's probably where he's keeping the ashes.
Gonna pull it out at the appropriate time, throw it in some water. Like a chia pet.
If you're Malcolm Merlyn at this point, and you gave up the fact that Oliver Queen's son is his biggest weakness, and you're waiting for Hive to take action there, what happens when that doesn't work, and you've been sitting on the fact that, hey, Oliver Queen's also the Green Arrow, and you go and tell that to Damian Dark, he's going to be like, why the hell did you not tell me this to begin with?
Maybe. I still have the impression, especially after what happens at the beginning of this episode, that they know that Oliver is the Green Arrow.
No, I don't think so.
I think at the end of this episode, you might be able to get that impression based off his confrontation with Reva. He pretty much gave up the ghost.
Well, you know, Oliver's got that spastic colon, so.
All right. I'm still holding with the fact that they don't know that he's the Green Arrow, that he thought he was being super witty with, and again, that was my quote at the beginning of the show, talking about bringing the house down. It's like, oh, come on, Ollie. Like, it's like poking the hornet's nest. Just, I know you like it, but you really shouldn't.
See, that's what I think. Reva knows. She's not stupid. She's probably the smartest one in the room.
Now, okay, let's agree to disagree on that point. Let's see if it comes back later.
Okay, that's fine. A lot of the stuff does. Let's see, we're on what, episode 14? We got 9 left. We'll see what happens.
We'll put a quarter on that one. You're probably right, but...
All right.
Listen, there were a few fights that we didn't talk about before we leave the fight scenes altogether. There was Diggle bruising it up with Jackhammer in that great fight in the first building. There was Team Arrow versus the Demolition Team. And what really caught my eye was that multi-level shot.
Right.
Where you're looking past Thea and Laurel down to the first level. I was just like, damn, that's great camera work.
Well, it was 3 levels, right? So it was through the elevator or dock or whatever that's up 2 stories. And then 1 story down across the warehouse, you had a fight going on. And then down on the ground floor.
That's right.
There was action going on. So it was wonderful choreography. I really enjoyed it. It just brings me back to that multiple scene a couple seasons ago where you had Nyssa and Malcolm and Oliver, and you had 3 different fights going on in 3 different areas. The same thing, shot a completely different way, but more spectacular even maybe. So it was really cool. Bam Bam, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, and this one, again, all 3 fights have to be choreographed together, but not beside each other. So those actors can't, and the stunt people can't see each other. They just have to know when those fights are going on above and below them.
Right. I was thinking there could be some CGI work where they're splicing the scenes together on the different levels or whatever, but that costs money, and this show does not cost a lot of money to make, so they probably did this real time. You're right. I don't know for sure, but that's just my guess.
And let's not forget that James Bamford is also, or has also been, the stunt coordinator as well. So we had that giant motorcycle leap at the beginning over the intersection. We had lots of running through the falling debris of boulders and collapsing walls, first with Captain Lance and Ollie getting out of the building, and then with Thea running out of the building as well. We had that really nice slide under the table. So the, you know, in combination with the great fight choreography, the stunt team really brought it on this one as well.
I got something to say about Thea. So she does, she's running through the building trying to get out, the same as the Lances earlier. Right. So she gets out of the building, you know, jumps through a window on the ground floor, and then just turns around and watches the building fall down. Girl, run away. That building could be coming down on you, and you don't want to breathe in that crap either. That'll give you cancer, as the people from New York know. So get away. Just don't stand there and watch the freaking building come down.
Doesn't she remember the Will Ferrell song from the VMAs or the MTV Music or Video Awards or whatever it was? Cool guys, don't look at explosions. You don't look at it. Just keep going.
Exactly. Right. Great stuff, though. I did enjoy it. It was captivating. I tried to... Again, I found myself trying to multitask and do multiple things at once. You know, you just get a little busy around the house from time to time. Nope. Had to watch this one. Had your full attention.
Totally. Let's talk about Ollie and how he's dealing with justifying the fact that he's continuing to lie and how much it's impacting him. I think he should know better by now, right? I think
yes.
The character should open up. He has to know that he can trust these people. And yet he still continues to try to justify it. And then Thea comes out and supports his approach. I mean, that's, I don't get it. Like, I'm confused.
Nothing good came from Oliver keeping a secret. I know he's trying to be honorable and he's trying to respect the mother. I get that sort of thing. But you don't hide something like that from your soon-to-be spouse. You tell all. Your spouse tells all, except for little surprises for each other, that sort of thing. But you tell everything. Otherwise, your relationship is doomed. It's doomed. And as we know, it is doomed here because, yes, Oliver and Laurel will be getting together by the time the show is canned. I'm just saying, it's going to happen. Take that, Chris.
I quit when that happens. Mark my words, I quit when that happens. I'll just go to a Flash-only guy. I'm sure they'll take me on the Crimson Comet.
Don't be a hater.
Chris, you were going to say something about Oliver keeping it in.
So going back to Oliver keeping it secret, I understand why he's doing it, because he thinks he's doing the right thing, because baby mama kind of forced his hand there. If you want to know your son, you can't tell anyone. When that happened, though, he should be like, look, I'm getting married. I have to tell my fiance. I can't keep this kind of secret from her. It's going to ruin things. But at that point in time, I think he's just kind of in shock, factoring the fact the whole Vandal Savage was happening at the same time. He just didn't really think about it. Now he's got to live with those consequences. And Thea's just kind of backing up her big brother. I mean, do I think she truly thinks it's the best idea? No, but she kind of realizes he has no choice at that point in time. And hopefully she stands by him when all the poo hits the fan next week.
I think he probably should have taken a step back when he realized, okay, Malcolm knows about William, which is not a good thing. Thea found out and she was on our side. I'm in the middle of a political campaign against the leader of Hive. They're going to be digging into the back. This is going to come out whether you like it or not.
Right. So I see the allure of trying to keep a secret on the side like this, because you don't want to impact their lives by what you're doing based on the fact of past regret, trying to fix something that his mom did, that sort of thing. But look, it is what it is. You're going to have to deal with it. Somebody is going to find out at some time, because if he is successful in becoming mayor, that sort of stuff, just, it's not hush hush. The reporters start thinking, Oliver has been taking a lot of overnight trips. Where exactly is he going? Because he's got business to do here in town.
By that same notion, then people should realize that he always disappears from these hours at night and there's a costume vigilante running around. Nobody really seems to realize that either.
Because plot.
Yeah, we've established on the Starling Tribune that everybody in the city knows that Oliver Queen is the Arrow, the Vigilante, the Hood, the Green Arrow, except for Quentin Lance. And now Quentin Lance knows, so everybody knows.
Except Mama Smoke. She's the new Quentin.
Not yet. And can we call Quentin Detective or Captain Pooh Bear now?
Captain Pooh Bear.
Right. Well, you know, I don't think he would mind because of who, you know, the actor is really dating in real life. So I think he'll take that. She might call him Pooh Bear. I mean, this might be something from his personal life that's making its way onto the set.
Hey, speaking of Felicity as well, though, and Felicity's mom, she is probably going to walk again thanks to Curtis.
No, thanks to Terrific Curtis.
Mr. Terrific Curtis.
No, there was no mystic. It's Curtis, you're terrific. No mystery yet. Yeah. That's awesome. We called it too. Like, Curtis is going to do it, or Ray is going to do it when he gets back from Legends of Tomorrow. And I'm glad that Curtis is doing this, and hopefully we'll see Felicity walk by the end of the year. And so she's in the limo at the gravesite, no wheelchair. Could be in the trunk, but I think she's walking on her own by that point.
So I tend to agree with Starsaber underscore 222. It seemed like a bit of a cop-out this soon. Oh, I've got a magic solution after three episodes. You're going to walk again. And I'm sitting here, I'm kind of like, because if you go back and look at some things, Oracle, Barbara Gordon, never really got the ability to walk again. It was teased a whole bunch of times. For it to only be three episodes, I'm like, man, that was really fast. I was hoping there'd be more of a, we got to figure something out. There's going to be some big plot to make this happen. He's like, hey, look what I've been working on. And I was like,
it's not the Oracle. She's Overwatch. There's a difference.
Well, I know. I'm using that as a parallel, though.
But it's not.
No, and I think that's the reason. It was an interesting arc, but I think more and more they're going to try to break from the classic Bat roots that this show has. And I think it makes its way back in from time to time, but they probably made a commitment to the storyline, but this isn't Batman. So let's solve it.
Okay, so she's going to have a biostimulator implanted in her body.
Please don't. Please don't.
What else can you do with a biostimulator?
Oh, no.
I'll just leave that on the... We got to at least mention it. Come on.
Oh, no.
Kids, if you're listening, ask your parents.
There are many uses to the biostimulator. Okay, so let's move on. Neil, what else we got?
Let's move on to Laurel. So Laurel had a lot of action and some dramatic scenes, again, when Rosie is firing the super nail gun at her and her face gets sliced open. But as usual, we can't talk Laurel without coming back to Chris. So, Chris, scale of 1 to 10, how annoying did you find Laurel? Because I think she had a great episode.
So, she saved Papa Lance, which is always a good thing in my book. Anytime you can save Papa Lance. But, you know, I looked at my girlfriend when that goes on, when she saved him and the building was falling down. I went, you know, I'd be willing to sacrifice Quentin if it meant that Laurel died.
You're harsh.
But in all honesty, from a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most annoying, I'd say like a 2, maybe. She really wasn't that annoying this week.
So, Chris, let me ask you. I mean, they could go completely off canon. So, what if Laurel is in the grave? You going to feel bad about telling that she's in the grave?
I'm not going to feel bad about it at all. I mean, but I kind of get where it would make sense, because she's kind of the character most on the periphery of things right now. Her only tie is her father and the fact that she's a member of the team. Everyone else has a lot more permanent ties to the team at this point in time. And I think it would make for a very interesting story point for Quentin. And then returning Sarah next season, if Laurel's the one that's dead. Do I think it's going to happen? Absolutely not.
I'm glad you added that, because I think they have, in the eyes of a lot of fans, myself included, they have rehabilitated this character. She's a stronger character this season. She has, I think, embraced the role of the Canary and of the DA. She's actively suiting up with Team Arrow on a regular basis. She's holding her own in a lot of these fights now. It's not the Laurel from even the beginning of this season, where she was still not holding her own. So I think she's a core part of the team now. She's no longer on the periphery.
And see, I agree with the fact they've rehabilitated the character. I think my dislike is a lot of lingering feelings from previous seasons where, like I've said before, she'd say something inherently selfish or dumb that causes everything to fall apart and it would make me get upset. I think part of my dislike now is I remember bits of that. She's not been doing that near as much this season. Like when she's comforting Diggle, when he's talking about Andy and things like that, there's great moments for that character progressing. It's just I can't get past the stupidity from prior seasons. Laurel bugs me. I'm sorry, guys. It's getting better.
Slowly. I don't mind her very much. I think she's in a tough spot because her sister's gone and presumably doesn't have any contact with her, even before she left with on the quest for Vandal Savage with Legends of Tomorrow. And it's just her and her dad, basically. And I get this feeling that they're just waiting for something to pop in the plot, and then she's going to circle right back in. And she's a stronger Laurel. She's a more competent Laurel. She's not saying stupid things. She's actually giving good advice when talking to people. So I hate to say it, but because I really disliked the way her character's arc went in season 2, and it never really recovered for me, but I think it's starting to now. So
the character's growing up is what's happening now. The character's finally growing up and blossoming and becoming someone that is much more likable.
Agreed. Someone who's been likable pretty much from the start has been Diggle, though. And guys, listen, as soon as his identity concealment device got knocked off his head, I was pointing at the screen. I'm like, you see, that's why you need a back on your helmet.
Yeah. Helmet time. We're going to get it before the end of the season, right? We've been told that a better helmet is coming. So
they have teased that he'd be getting an enhancement to his identity concealment device. And my guess is probably something that tightens on a little better and maybe has a back.
Maybe a little bit more padding to take a 12-pound sledge to the back of the head. You know, maybe. Might be good.
It would help.
I think Curtis could, you know, jury-rig something up.
Curtis or Cisco?
Cisco. My vote's on Cisco.
I always defer to Cisco, though, I'll be honest. When it comes to my superhero apparel, I want Cisco to do it.
So, did you guys watch Flash this week?
I did.
I did as well.
Okay, no spoilers here, because we're a spoiler-free on Flashcast in here, because there are some people that just haven't had a chance to watch it yet. However, in the preview for next week, Diggle shows up in Central City again, right?
Indeed.
Amazing stuff is going to happen, and I think it ties in to a statement that Diggle said this episode that, hey, we talked about it. I asked the question 2 weeks ago. I listened to that podcast today, as I always do. I try 2 weeks later, try to listen to the podcast. We were talking about and I asked you both specifically, so do you think that Lila is going to be the head of Argus? And we were all like, yeah, Argus is gone. We're never going to see it again. Well, guess who's in charge?
Which is kind of interesting when you consider the fact that she was basically retired and is now magically in charge. She's unretired.
Called back into service.
I guess. having that nice little line of something to the effect of, hey, I'm on daddy duty because Lila's over at Argus or taking care of Argus tonight. I was like, okay. So next week's Flash definitely seems to indicate it's more of an Argus operation that Diggle is supporting in Central City.
I am just happy that we get to keep Argus in the Berlanti-verse, in the Arrowverse, because that means the Argus t-shirt that I bought is still relevant.
Caveat.
Purely selfish.
For now.
Damn you, Chris!
They could still take our toys away.
Yeah, they could put Lila in the grave, and then goodbye Argus. They could.
Be an interesting way to... we hadn't really considered Lila in the grave too much.
Not listening to you.
Which means technically Argus is in the grave too, then.
That's right.
Nope.
It's on life support now anyway.
Touche.
So, we talked about Speedy's action before, which was really great, but she had some off the action scenes as well, particularly with Oliver. She's running the campaign. We'll talk about Mr. Political Intern Dude in a second, but so... Neil, what do you think about Thea's non-action scenes in this episode?
I think her big scene, and we talked about this a bit earlier, was the digging that she had done with the campaign into Ollie's background, kind of red teaming himself, and then confronting Ollie on the whole William thing. And I like that she was being a big sister or a little sister and supporting her brother in a grown-up fashion. I just don't think, again, it was the right call. I mean, listen, she has been impacted by Ollie's lies almost more than anybody. If we even go back to the Ollie knew that Malcolm Merlyn was her father before she did, knew about the undertaking, knew about Mom's involvement in it, it has impacted her immensely across the entire series, not just a season, but the series. And now she's saying, no, you shouldn't tell. The right thing to do is not to tell her. I don't buy that for a second.
Well, you've got to remember, she's the daughter of Malcolm Merlyn and, wow, I forgot the character of the mom now.
Moira.
Moira Queen. What do those two characters deal most in? Secrets. She's bred to be like, oh, keep that a secret.
And she's still got the bloodlust or something funky going on with that, right?
Right. And in all seriousness, she's following what her brother's wish seems to be on that, is he's got to keep it quiet to see his son, and she's kind of backing him up. I don't know if she necessarily agrees with it. She doesn't seem to say one way or another. Who knows?
Well, no, because she was saying, listen, people will go at your family to get to you, and it's dangerous, and the fewer people that know about, you know, your family and your son, the better. So, no, I think she was overtly saying it's the right thing to do. But ignore the fact that I found it, and that the other political team will probably find it. And so, yeah, I didn't buy it.
So I'll just mention, since we're leaving Thea in the political talk, Alex, this was a pretty pivotal episode for him to be around, and he was off visiting his sick mother. That's twice this week that excuse has been used on comic book TV. Agent Carter on Tuesday night was the first. Not cool. He should have been there. Political intern dude. Who's in the grave, should have been there. That's, it might have been a conflict or something. They couldn't get him.
Maybe that's your subtle hint right there that he is part of Hive, is he's off plotting Hive plans and conspiracy theories instead of plotting campaign wins and victories. I don't know.
He could have been used in this episode, especially since he is part of Hive and he could have been working behind the scenes with the guys putting the bombs.
See?
That's right. He just didn't want to be anywhere near the debate. So, mama's sick, gotta go home.
I think he had to go to Spain and clean up the body for Damien.
Just like random DJ dude from season 3 or 2.
Somebody's gotta, right?
Oh, I hate being Damien's intern as well. I hate this.
So, you guys agree with me that he's working for Hive. Okay, I'm glad we finally...
No, I do not.
Neil, you've read comics for how many years? They can use the same device twice.
Yeah, nope. They cannot use that same device twice.
Yes, they can.
No, let's bring somebody in for Thea. Oh, it's a double agent again. Let's bring, hey, nobody will see this coming. No.
You should know better than everybody here.
Oh, but I choose not to. I'm an optimist. Let's talk about the demolition team because, again, let's bring back the villain of the week scale. With one being Moist from Dr. Horrible, sing-along blog, and 10 being Deathstroke as far as effectiveness, deadliness, how much you like them. 1 is at the bottom of the scale. 10 is at the top of the scale, starting with Chris, Demolition Team.
6, maybe? I feel like I'm going a little high on it. I mean, they accomplished their mission of taking out buildings. They just can't kill anyone inside, and it looks cool.
6 is crazy. I mean, this is the first time you've broken 5, Chris. I'm blown away.
I could have sworn I'd broken 5 before.
I don't think so. No way, man.
Maybe I'm just having happy pills tonight or something. I don't know.
SP, where are you ranking the Demolition Team?
I'm going to tell you my rationale before I give you my number. Okay, so Sledgehammer Guy was pretty cool. I mean, he's whipping that thing around like it's a wiffle ball bat, really. And he's making some large damage, whatever. And he's going toe-to-toe with Spartan, who is not a lightweight, you know, in terms of experience, in terms of technique, in terms of power. So that was pretty cool. Nail Gun Woman, that was great. That was straight out of Lethal Weapon, and I loved it. It was awesome. I know it's been in more stuff than Lethal Weapon, but that's the first time I saw a nail gun used in anger, and I'm like, ew. So I actually have some nail guns, like, right over that wall over there. Not in the room, but in my wood shop over there. And I have tested them to make sure that I couldn't shoot myself, right? Based on that. So I thought that was pretty cool. I did. And then we talked about it before, the other dude, he went toe-to-toe with Oliver, and he kept up. Matter of fact, he got the advantage a few times. Of course, he couldn't seal the deal, but he was there doing it. And I think that because of that, because I can't go toe-to-toe with Oliver, there's no way that I could do that. I mean, I'd spray and pray with an M4 or something. So, based on that, and Moist from Dr. Horrible and Tenneth's Deathstroke. It's definitely better than the dudes that took out Waller. I'll go with a 7.
Wow.
When you thought mine was high.
All right, guys. You called it, though, right? You called it. They could not seal the deal, right? The guys that took out Waller, and I'm going to come back to this because I still can't believe how low you guys ranked.
Hey, to be fair, I couldn't seal the deal a lot in college, but I still rated myself fairly high.
And we're done. This has been the...
I was going for the humor. Sorry, guys.
Somebody had to say it. I was thinking of it the entire time, too.
Everyone kept saying, seal the deal. And I'm like, the joke has to be made.
Star Saver, hashtag for the episode, seal the deal.
Wow, I got to say this with a straight face. I don't think I can do it. I'm going to say it again, though. So you said they couldn't seal the deal. Now, Shadow Spire could seal the deal. They took out Waller. They took out the 2 Argus agents with the eyeball on the popsicle stick. They took out how many Argus agents in the Argus building? And you guys ranked them below 5. The Demolition Team blows up a couple buildings. They kill 2 factory workers. And that's it. That's the body count. That's the effectiveness.
I don't know. 2 buildings taken down is pretty high on my list.
But they're buildings. It's not like they fought back. So I'm ranking them a 4.
But they went toe-to-toe with Team Arrow multiple times.
And struck blood.
That's right. They made Laurel bleed her own blood. Nobody makes her bleed her own blood.
Instead of somebody else's blood, yes, because that happens. All right, I will give you that. I will give them a 5, but they are not getting past 5. So our average, we have a 6, we have a 7, we have a 5, average of 6. Chris, we're going with your score.
I'm really bummed no one caught my dodgeball reference there.
You could dodge a wrench. You could dodge a ball. I miss him. All right. Let's talk about the kidnapping. Who thought Samantha Clayton is dead?
This guy.
Which pains me to no end because hashtag Anna Hopkins for Captain Marvel. I believe Anna Hopkins is a wonderful actor. I want to see her on screen again, and I hope we do. But based on how this went down, I think she's dead.
I still say Katie Sackhoff for Captain Marvel, but whatevs. No, in all seriousness, I think she's dead. Star Saber brought up a good point. He goes, if so, William doesn't know it. It could have been she got killed before he saw it. And they said, hey, your mom said I'm taking care of you or something like that and made up some trick or lie. It is Damian Dark. He's a master of deceit.
Besides, he's taken to a place where he gets a good date, you know?
It's true. He is Oliver Queen's kid. I mean, he knows what the lady's like. He's a queen.
So is Anna Hopkins in the grave?
Not that one.
We've talked about this before. I don't think that would upset Felicity as much.
No, I think you're right.
I tend to agree. She's going to be mad, obviously, that's Oliver's baby mama, but she's not going to be mad and be like, you've got to kill him for doing that.
That would not be Felicity.
No.
No. So any thoughts on who's in the grave then? Are we sticking with our previous guesses on this one?
This went strong towards William on this one. I'll give them credit for them being a Wendy Miracle and Greg Berlanti and whoever else is really helming the season. Every episode, it's like, well, it could be this. It could be this. In this episode alone, you look at Mama Smoke and William a lot more than you did in the past.
And Captain Lance. They really drive that fact home that Damien is PO'd with Captain Lance at this point, and he's done with him. I would lean more heavily towards Mama Smoke and Captain Lance because that's what would cause that reaction out of Felicity the most, I think.
I think if it were Felicity's mom, she would still be more broken up. I don't think she would be back in the thing with dry eyes. I think she would still be a bit more messed up.
I unfortunately still think it's Quentin Lance, and that really pains me because I think the show needs that character. I think it needs somebody in the city and the Commissioner Gordon sort of character. Because there really is nobody left. He is it.
Right. So I'm with SP. I kind of think it's been Quentin Lance. And it's also the same reason I think Joe West is going to die in The Flash eventually, is you have to get rid of that older mentor to make the hero stand on their own.
So with Joe West, I think that he is such a fan favorite at this moment that they're not going to do it on Earth One.
Right. Well, I don't think they're going to kill him anytime soon. I still think we're a couple years out from that being the case.
Okay.
But at some point, Joe West, that crutch will have to be removed. And I think that's what you might see with Captain Lance in this case, is that, remember, they made a big point of Oliver telling him, you inspired me to do this, to act in the light and things like that. They've sealed that breach, healed the breach, rather.
Okay.
That puts the target better on his back.
So, just to be clear, Joe West is not Moira Queen. Moira Queen, she had to go. I was not a fan of Moira Queen. She was screwing things up so badly that that character just could not stabilize the show. I mean, you can't have Moira Queen and Malcolm Merlyn on the show. It would have just been too much chaos. So in this particular case, Joe West is not that destabilizing factor. He's a stabilizing factor. And I think Flash needs that character for a couple more years, even though they're nearing the same point in Flash. Do I know anything? No, I don't. There's no spoilers here. It's just my speculation. Wild speculation, too. And #SP is always wrong.
We do like wild speculation here on the Starling Tribune. No, that's half the fun.
We also like wild stallions.
Dude!
Nice pull.
Wild stallion. Yeah, very nice pull. I still think, speaking of wild speculation, that it's the calculator in the grave. It is out in left field, but I think she's still upset, but not totally broken. I think that the calculator is going to try to do right by his daughter. They did not resolve who the calculator was working for when he said it was my employer who wanted me to do all that stuff. I think that we're going to get him back. He's going to try to do the right thing and end up paying for it with his life. There's my wild speculation.
Fair enough.
I don't know that Oliver would be as upset about him dying, though.
It's Felicity's dad.
Yeah.
I don't know that Barry would care. Remember, Barry comes to talk to Oliver about this.
Especially if Oliver tried to prevent it from Damien actually doing it. Or Malcolm, for that matter.
Yeah, and again, I think he mainly, well, in that scenario, and again, it's just wild speculation, but he would be coming because he knew that impacts Felicity, not necessarily Ollie. And Ollie, you know, Ollie feels responsible for everything that goes on around him.
Just like Barry.
Yeah, and that's the mark of a good superhero.
Yep.
The good superhero doesn't care only about themselves. That they wouldn't be out there doing what they're doing if that was the case.
Guy Gardner disagrees.
Wow. Okay, I'll give you that. But then it's Guy Gardner, so.
All right.
And Guy Gardner's a dick.
So next week, we have episode 15. And, ooh, Liam Neeson is coming on board?
Ollie have one set of skills, one particular set of skills. Episode's name is Taken, Season 4, Episode 15, air date of Wednesday, February 24th. Oliver calls his old friend Vixen for help in fighting Damien Dark, while Thea has a heart-to-heart with Malcolm Merlyn.
I hope she stabs him.
I loved Vixen's X-Men costume, just saying.
Yeah, it's classic. Directed by Gregory Smith. Writers are Kito Shimizu and Brian Ford Sullivan.
What an experience. Arrow has had a stabilizing factor of people that have been with the show for a while. These names keep on popping up. They have been with Arrow for a while, so they know where the show is going. They know where the show has been, and they know how to write these characters. These episodes are going to be amazing. So as we do every week, we talk about the Easter eggs, the DC Easter eggs in the episode. It started out with the back checklist way back when Wing and I were doing it in episode one, and it has evolved to the DC checklist. And now we're just talking about Easter eggs. So what do we have this week, Chris?
So the first one, this is not the first time an episode of Arrow has shared the title of a Bruce Springsteen song.
Really?
Code of Silence is a Springsteen song, I'm told. I'm not a huge fan of The Boss, so I'm going to take your word for it.
The second Easter egg that we have is, it's not really a hidden Easter egg. It's kind of right in front of you, but it is the Demolition Team. So they are an official DC Comics supervillain team who first appeared actually as a Green Lantern villain. And remember back with classic Green Lantern, the green power rings couldn't work against yellow. The Demolition Team all showed up wearing safety yellow outfits, and that's why they made a great Green Lantern villain. They've been used again in Infinite Crisis and Superman Event Our Worlds at War, and tonight we had three members of the team. So it was good to see a classic, if somewhat underused, DC villains team.
They might be back too, because they were arrested.
That's right. They can get out of prison. They broke down buildings. The prison's just a fancy building.
Iron Heights is just a hotel for the homeless villains.
That's not too far off.
It's like Arkham. The third Easter egg is, well, it's not, again, really an Easter egg, but it is a bit of crossing the streams. So Daniel Cudmore played the guy with the sledgehammer on this team. I believe his character's name was Jackhammer. He actually played Colossus in X2, X-Men Unlimited, and X-Men Last Stand, and X-Men Days of Future Past. So, crossing the streams, he's next going to be seen in Warcraft.
But he wasn't Colossus in Deadpool.
No, he was not.
The next one we're going to have to, Neil, we're just going to have to let Chris take the next one. Just have to.
Oh, well, this is when Oliver referred to Curtis as terrific once Felicity had gotten her cure.
Actually, I was talking about the one before, sir.
Yeah.
What I missed before?
Damian Dark does...
Show notes.
Show notes.
I'm reading the article. I was like, I don't see it. Oh, Damian Dark doing the Force choke. Sorry, I was on the actual article itself, and I was like, what are you guys talking about? That was next to the list. Damian Dark pulling a total Darth Vader move and being like, you have failed me for the last time. And Force choking a guy.
Chris, you have failed this podcast for the last time.
Reaching out over Blab. Exactly.
That's great.
Now I have to send an intern to your home studio to clean up the body. That's...
We'll just send the beardless Willie. For information on that, go watch this week's All Things Good and Nerdy. It's worth it. Okay, so this week in Arrow News, we have a feud that's been kept alive, haven't we, Neil?
We have. So if you're a fan of Stephen Amell, and I am definitely on Team Amell, he and the WWE wrestling villain Stardust have had an ongoing feud. He has appeared at, I believe it was WWE Raw, or it was one of the weekend events, and where he fought Stardust, and he was awarded the Slammy. We talked about that a few weeks ago. At a comic convention this weekend, Stardust showed up to throw water in Stephen Amell's face on a panel to ask the rest of the panelists to actually leave the conference room. It's a great video. WWE has posted the full walk through the convention floor. Definitely check it out. And again, there's a great charity component in there, as Stephen Amell now has his Slammy back and they will indeed be auctioning it off for charity.
Oh, good.
So, as a former big-time professional wrestling fan and now more of a casual fan, the rumors going around the professional wrestling sites is that WWE and Stephen Amell are setting up a WrestleMania fight for Stardust and the Green Arrow. So that's just a rumor at this point, but you could see Stephen Amell at WrestleMania.
Wow, that'd be huge.
Which is basically the World Series or Super Bowl of wrestling.
Every time I hear WrestleMania, I go back to Groundhog Day. WrestleMania! WrestleMania 17 or whatever it was back then. Okay, Chris, you take the next story, sir.
So we talked about this a little bit earlier. Diggle and Layla, they're headed to Central City. They're after a certain shark acquaintance of ours, it would appear, based off the preview for next week. It would appear that Diggle is there not in his capacity as Spartan, but as Layla's man, who also works for her in Argus on occasion.
I think he's there to babysit, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's there to be Daddy Diggle.
If you've seen the trailers for that episode, I love both the audio and visual elements they have incorporated. Certain callback to a certain movie from the early 80s. Actually, it's probably the 70s at this point, isn't
70s,
it?
70s, I think.
70s.
It is.
In all seriousness, they're probably sending Diggle there because he can be a true liaison to Team Flash because he's worked with the Flash before, whereas Layla technically hasn't.
Well, you know, if he's going to end up in the grave, then this is his last hurrah to Central City.
No! Stop saying that!
No way!
Kill Diggle and we riot. It's just like Daryl Dixon. You kill him and we riot.
It's not the same. I'm telling you. It's not. Look at the ratings. It's not the same. Okay, Neo, what do we got for the last news story?
The next one, we've talked about the episode Taken, next week's episode, and there wasn't a lot of news out this week. So I figured instead of news, let's talk about Vixen, the character of Mari McCabe, who's going to be showing up in next week's episode. So just a bit about her backstory. Her first appearance was supposed to be in 1978 in a new standalone series focusing on diversity within the DC universe. The series never got off the ground, and in a limited run series called Cancelled Comic Cavalcade, the name is pretty telling. They took stuff that never even saw the light of day and just put it out the door. In 1978, we got her first appearance. Her origin story and backstory first came out in Action Comics number 521 in July of 1981, and that was the first time the character saw general release. I think one of the high points as far as the comics go was the awesome writer G. Willow Wilson in 2008 began a 5-issue limited series called Vixen Return of the Lion. And I popped onto Comixology today to pick that up. It is all there. And just one step away from the checkout, I'm like, I think I need this in hard copy. So I'm holding off until those good folks at Amazon get me my copy in the mail.
Nice. Amazon.ca, right?
Yes, I use CA for this one. Not, of course, because I can order into the U.S. and cross borders,
Nerd.
Which I've been known to do. Yes.
Nerd.
Now, where a lot of people may be familiar with the character of Vixen, more recently, again, we talked about this, the CW Seed, their online media distribution arm, had a 6-episode limited animated series where she was incorporated into the Arrowverse, both Steve Nomel and Grant Gustin voice their characters in it. And it is canon. So they have both interacted with Vixen before in the Arrowverse. So I'm really curious how they're going to make reference to the animated series. Again, one of the writers for next week, Kito Shimizu, was the writer for the Vixen limited series. So that should be great. Where else you might have seen her is she was a huge part of the animated series Justice League Unlimited. And you'll see it in the show notes. There are some great best of clip reels on YouTube. So if you're not familiar with the character, definitely pop over to YouTube and check out how she was portrayed both on the CW Seed and on Justice League Unlimited. I think it'll give you a great backgrounder. As far as her power set goes, she wears a mystical amulet, which was basically created by Anansi, the African spider trickster god. And if you're a Neil Gaiman fan of both either Anansi Boys or American Gods, you'll be familiar with that mythology. But Anansi created this totem that she wears, a necklace effectively, that can convey the power of different animal creatures to her as she draws upon them. So she is a fantastic superhero.
You're getting me excited even more to see next week. We've got this whole William kidnap thing, and now we've got this. This is going to be great.
And they'd always teased that bringing Vixen into the animated series was a first step to see how she was received along the way to bring her into the live action series. And it didn't take that long. And here we have her in season 4. So I am super pumped.
I know a lot of people have been waiting for this episode, so it's going to be good.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so moving on into comic and toy news. We have Black Canary.
Yeah, Black Canary dropped last week. Again, if you haven't been sticking up with Black Canary number 8 deals with the mysterious White Ninja Clan. Apparently, now again, I am not reading Black Canary in the New 52 or the Post-Convergence series, but apparently Vixen actually does make a cameo in this issue as well, which is great. But it's an off week for the core Green Lantern book or Green Arrow book this week, as well as Dark Archer. Mm-hmm. I managed to catch up with the Dark Archer webcomics this week, and they're awesome.
Right. And don't forget that apparently DC is going to reboot again when the issues get to be 52. So we're talking just a few weeks away, basically, from that.
Well, now they're saying it's not a reboot, but I haven't paid enough attention to see what it actually is.
Yeah. So they came out today, and Geoff Johns, who is the chief creative officer at DC, who's also the lead on the Justice League book, came out and said, Rebirth is not a reboot, and it never was. So Geoff Johns is taking a leave from Justice League to focus 100% on this. I believe we're around issue 49 or 50 for most of the key books. So we've got a couple months left to go, but it should be excited. It's going to be maybe some series get rebooted. Some will get merged. It should be interesting, but DC's on a bit of a roll right now, and hopefully whatever they do doesn't wreck something that's starting to work.
Okay. And then I have a question before we move on to the next one. So, Neil, just how many additional Pop Funkos can your house hold?
Damn USP.
Well, you're the one who put this story in, so you kind of have to talk about it.
I kind of have to talk about
it. Yeah.
I'm making room. They all live in my closet, as we've talked about before. They don't sit around the house in general. Listen, so Felicity showed up this week. I'm very glad to have my own Felicity Pop Funko. I had pre-ordered her. She has joined Team Arrow. But this week, it was New York Toy Fair. So if you're a toy geek, this is like the SDCC for toy geeks, where most of the manufacturers and distributors have massive booths. Funko outlined a great line of Suicide Squad Funkos, of Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice Funkos, and of course, they'll be doing a new Green Arrow Funko, and actually a Thea as Speedy Funko, which are all in the pipeline.
Even better.
Yeah, if you're a big fan of Arrow and not so much of what Suicide Squad has done to the Arrowverse, you should take some solace in the fact that I think the Katana Suicide Squad Pop Funko will go very nicely with your CW Arrow Pop Funkos without creating much havoc there.
There you go. And then Justice League Rebirth. What's up with that?
Yeah, and so that's, we just spoke about how they aren't going to reboot the series, that the Justice League Rebirth and the DC Rebirth event will be coming in a couple of months.
I didn't know if this was something different or not. Okay. So now is the section of the podcast where we get to feedback, and we will talk about anything you guys tweet us, anything you email us, anything that comes up on our Facebook. If you want to comment on our posts on the GunnaGeek.com network, or if we receive voicemails. And once again, we have Black Adam coming through with that. Here we go.
Hey guys, it's Adam calling in with my feedback on this week's episode of Arrow. And well, this episode was just kind of average, middle of the road. Donna was annoying, and I'm even more sure now that she's going to be the one in the grave because of how much they're tying her in with the Quentin stuff, and she's probably going to find something out shortly before she dies. Speaking of finding things out, Thea found out about William, and I really expected that would come out in the debate, and that would be how Felicity found out. Though I guess I was just a week off about that, with Dark being a complete jerk and kidnapping him. Which I suppose, as long as he doesn't hurt him, which he seems to not be doing at the moment, would go with his code as demonstrated when the last mayoral candidate's daughter was kidnapped and he didn't like the way Anarchy handled that situation. It was good to see Tayla from Stargate Atlantis again, though they didn't really do all that much with any of the villains this week. I'd put them at maybe a 2 or 3 on your guys' scale. Well, I guess that's about it. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, I disagree with his rating, but I will agree that I did expect that the William factor was going to come out in the debate. I thought that was a very much a politically destabilizing event that could occur. But of course, we saw what actually happened. So you don't want to call attention to the kid if you're going to kidnap him. So keep it secret. What else do you think, Neil?
All I can say is if you add a 2 to the 5, 6, and 7, the average is now 5. He's brought the average down. So back to my score. Way to go, Adam. I appreciate that feedback. Team, yeah, they're not so great.
I love it.
All right. So, Chris, what else can people look forward to on the network?
So, we mentioned this a lot because we want you guys to remember we're part of a network. There's a ton of other geeky and nerdy and awesome podcasts over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. This week, we want to highlight episode 17 of the In Defense Of cast. It's entitled My Ears, My Choice. This week, Kier welcomes special guests Neil and Rolling Stone journalist and renowned Slayer biography author DX Ferris to the show as the hosts look at the nature of music preferences, where they originate, and if/when to respectfully recommend new music. Go check that out over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Absolutely. And at this point in time, I'm going to insert a little promo of Gunna Geek Network hosts and producers, convention attendees. We talked about C2E2 before, but there's a lot more going on, and we're establishing a whole list of where we're going to be found throughout the year. So last weekend, Kier and Haley, both from Gallifrey Public Radio, went to Gallifrey One out in LA with some other friends and whatever, but they were both on panels when they were there, both Kier and Haley. And Haley at a Doctor Who convention talked about comics in the 70s and 80s. So that was pretty cool, if you ask me. And then Kier was on a Doctor Who related panel as well. And Peter Melnick from Audibly Exquisite on the 5th of March will be at Big Apple Con, and Kier will again be going to another Who event, Regeneration Who, on the same weekend that Chris and I will be at C2E2, and that will be the 18th through the 20th of March. And then Miss Supervillain Lauren Labrat will be at AggieCon on April 1st through the 3rd, and apparently they are in the process of seeing if they're going to do a panel or not. But even if they're not doing a panel down there, then go ahead and link up with her down there. And then last, I'll throw out another Kier Hant. The dude is just amazing. He's a travel hawk. He's going to be going to LI Geek that same weekend of April 2nd through 6th. So a lot of places that you can see Gunna Geekers. Will continually update this list so that you can see where people will be at in the future. All right. So thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. Blab is working tonight. It didn't work for me last night. So thank you very much. We really appreciate everybody in the chat, PopX podcast, Stephen John Drew, Mr. Ray was in here as well, Mad Hatter as well. And of course, let's not forget Mr. Black Adam himself. So thank you, everybody, for popping on in, and anybody who was here before.
Great. And if you're listening to a YouTube recast of this podcast, or if you're downloading and listening to our audio podcast and you want to join in the live fun, you can join us live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im and search for Starling Tribune. And don't forget that after the show, we always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show on the network is a special spoiler-filled Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast on Deadpool, Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. Oh my God, guys, what are you doing to me? Followed by the ATGN Crew's spoiler-filled take on Deadpool, at Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, and that's All Things Good and Nerdy with Chris.
That's me.
Yeah, back-to-back Deadpool episodes, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't really want to plan it that way, but it's what happened. So lots of Deadpool to be discussed on Sunday. And if you haven't seen the movie yet, you got Friday night and Saturday to go see it. Don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe us on iTunes. I can't emphasize enough how that helps other people find us. Even if they're just searching for a podcast and they open up it and they see the ratings and they see the reviews, it really does help us. And thank you to everybody that's actually reviewed us and given us a 5-star review. We really do appreciate it, more so than you might think. And don't forget, like us on Facebook. You can click on the subscribe button on the GunnaGeek.com YouTube channel. And you can always, always, always badger us on Twitter. A lot of people do. We like hearing from you guys. We like participating in the conversations. And you can catch us at Starling Tribune or any of our individual Twitters as well.
That's right. And don't forget, you can find all our contact information over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, which is also the home of all of the great podcasts that are part of the network. While you're over there, find another podcast that might tickle your nerd fancy and check out our forums. Tons of stuff going on over there. But if you want to share your thoughts with us, you can feel free to head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or give us a call at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Guys, another fantastic episode, or should I say, terrific. That about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab interface to our live listeners? At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag beard extensions.
At Stargate Pioneer.
Biostimulator.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag someone got Vadered. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.
Guys, it was great to hang out and talk about how much geeky goodness there is.
That's right.
I'm sure we'll figure out how to watch all of it someday.
Yeah, that's the plan, right?
I know.
That's the dream.
The dream is alive.
All right.
Night, everybody.
Night.
Take care. Bye-bye.